Fifth Quarter Podcast. We got playoff basketball to talk about. We got Nick stuff to talk about, which is our favorite topic. What do you say to that, Nick?
I have so many things to say, and if I start talking right now, I won't stop. All I got to say, though, is that the only valid way to initiate an offense is by forcing a pass to the low post, and three-pointers are cheap shots. Those were opening statements.
Yep. Honestly, I feel like we should have done like a couple separate podcasts, like one to just discuss the playoffs and like one just talk about the futility of the Knicks.
I think that I would do an entire series of podcasts, like just like 15 minutes, 20 minutes of just ranting about the Knicks. That would be so good for my emotional and psychological health. I think if I just had an outlet where I could talk about Phil Jackson and James Dolan and, you know, staying mellow, the struggles to stay mellow. Because that's what I would call it. I would call it like struggling to stay mellow, something like that. I don't know.
Honestly, I think that we could probably amass a pretty large following if we started like a Knicks support group kind of podcast, you know. And like we talk through our issues with the Knicks and people listen in and it really helps, like you said, it helps their mental state and it helps their well being. So maybe that'll be like a summer project for us. We have to talk to the Hoops Inquirer producers and everything and see if they'll green light that, but I think it definitely would be beneficial for a lot of people out there.
That's where the money is, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the kind of thing that Phil Jackson would guest on, because it's like very passive aggressive and it undermines like the purpose of his job. I think we could go somewhere nice with that.
Yeah, I agree. Why don't we accidentally make this into the first episode of that podcast though? Why don't we talk about the playoffs and what's been going on there? Because we are well underway into playoff season right now, and there's some interesting stuff that's been going on. So where do you want to start with this?
I think that we got to start with Celtics Bulls because that's the saddest and funniest one at the same time. And Celtics Twitter is like my least favorite NBA Twitter. So. Mm. I'm enjoying it on that level. So let's talk about them.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's a good place to start because there's some stuff going on. I mean, obviously, so, you know, the Celtics are down 2-0 to the 8-seeded Bulls. Like, not just the 8-seeded Bulls, but like the dysfunctional, like, you know, dramatic, like undermining, just like the terrible Bulls. Like, so.
Yeah,
I mean,
like this Bulls team, I've never seen a group of people that make millions and millions and millions of dollars to play professional basketball who look more miserable doing their job. Like these guys, like I don't think they like each other. I don't think they like their coach. I don't think they like the front office. Like they just look like they're clocking in, and like I feel like they might like fall ass backwards into the championship, and it'll be really really funny.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that happening. I made the comparison yesterday where, like, at some point during the fourth quarter of the game and like, you know, it was like Zipser would just knock down a three and then Portis would knock down, like, a fadeaway three and then Wade would pull up from, like, you know, 25 and hit a three. And it just felt, for me, it was like every single shot that the Bulls were hitting was, like, a gut punch and, like, you know, the thing I compared it to was, like, you know, when you're playing pickup and you're playing, like, you know, 16 or whatever, and some dude hits a three-pointer and he banks it in to win the game, and you're just like, oh, man. Like, if everyone knows the shot's going in, you can't do anything about it. Just feel, it's, like, the worst feeling in the world. I think that's what every shot that the Bulls hit against the Celtics kind of feels like. That's what I imagine. And, you know, we could see it on the Celtics players. They had a lot of emotion spill over, and they were kind of letting it get to them, I think. And I wonder if that's a little bit indicative, because they are a relatively inexperienced bunch of the playoffs. So I think that kind of speaks to their composure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, their body language was terrible. You know, from Isaiah and Marcus Smart just, like, kind of bickering at each other to Marcus Smart slipping off the – I think it all just comes back down to Marcus Smart, but – No, but he was their best player yesterday in that game.
Yeah, like whatever. Like who cares? He put off a fan. He like played good defense, but like it doesn't matter. They got blown out. You know, like
yeah.
like Celtics fans are always on the internet like, oh, ex player tries so hard, we love him. Like, I don't care how hard you try. I think the biggest question that this has to raise in the minds of watching it, because like the Bulls are up 2-0 and they're going back to their home court. So like the question that I'm thinking of myself when I'm watching this is like, was this Celtics team ever for real? Like, they're an awful one seed. Like, everybody knew that. Like, like, how did we not all see how flimsy this team is? Like, it's a bunch of dudes around a 5'9" guy who can't rebound, who, like, are mediocre shooters, like you're saying, who, like, play good defense, but primarily because they try exorbitantly hard in the beginning of the season when nobody else is trying quite as hard. Like, they're so clearly flimsy. I don't know, like, why we didn't all see it earlier.
Well, so here's my thing on that is I think that, like, because of the collection of players that they are, and it's, like, because it's a really, like, a very nice collection of players, you know what I mean? Like, that's exactly, like, I would say it's a very nice collection of players. And in the regular season, you know, when you have Brad working his magic and you have teams that are either going to be, like, tired or, you know, not going to be scouting you so heavily, and you can kind of, you can tailor your system, you can tailor your players, especially, you know, a guy like Isaiah, to kind of generate, like, enough offense, you know, and they're going to try hard on defense. They got some really good individual defenders. And I think that definitely in the regular season, that formula makes a lot of sense. But then, like, when you get down to it in the playoffs and you know, you can debate whether, how much merit the playoff thing has, but they, you know, it does seem like there's, like, a very clear difference in playoff strategy as opposed to regular season strategy, and whether that's like just being able to scout teams more or just like locking in the playoffs, whatever it may be. The fact of the matter is the Celtics team is basically comprised of Isaiah Thomas, who is 5'3" actually. They have like a bunch of role players who are very fine, but also all very flawed. And they have Al Horford, who has kind of been a no-show this series so far. And honestly, with Horford, just kind of as a side note, he's a really nice player, and he does a lot of things really well. He is a in my opinion, he's a bad fit on the Celtics team, just
Ooh.
As it's currently constructed.
That's a take.
But I think he definitely can work within their offense and can you know, he can act as a facilitator and he can hit open jumpers, whatever. But the team, like, it's a terrible rebounding team, which has been, you know, it's been exploited by the best big man in the league, Robin Lopez. But, you know, he's a bad rebounder, so he compounds that problem. He's not really the offensive fulcrum that they need. And he's honestly very emblematic of the Celtics team, I think. But, like, he does a lot of things at, like, a pretty good level. But he's also not quite a high enough variance player for this team to get to the next level. And I think that's part of the problem is, like, they don't really have these high variance players like the Bulls have. Like, the Bulls have three guys who, you know, maybe they'll shoot out of the game or maybe they'll kill you. But, you know, between Butler, Wade, and Rondo, you see what they're capable of. Whereas the Celtics don't really have guys with that kind of upside, I think.
Yeah, I remember when the Celtics signed Horford this offseason, all, like, the think pieces that were like, oh, he's the perfect fit in Brad Stevens' system, were like, he's exactly what you need. He's kind of like, you know, high-character, passing, unselfish player that the Celtics team needs. You know, their playoff, their championship window is now wide open. Like, whatever! Like, that was ridiculous, and it looks even more ridiculous now. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, Al Horford's a very good player, right? Al Horford's great, but, like, he's not, like, him and Isaiah Thomas do not give you a championship contender team. Like, they just don't.
Yeah. This is not necessarily a hot take, because I've kind of been, like, thinking this on the down low for a little while, but I think that Horford contract for the Celtics is going to loom as kind of, like, a major, maybe not major, but it's definitely going to loom as an impediment down the road. just as they start having to make decisions about their roster and about, like, you know, whether they have to, because they have to pay all the guards soon, and those guys are going to get expensive, and whether or not they can get another star and they have to pay him. Because, I mean, at some point that Horford contract is going to become unmovable. And even though it's going to probably end up not being as much money as the cap continues to rise, you know, he's a guy who he'll probably age okay, but he's going to, A, end up having to play center at some point soon exclusively because he's not going to be able to chase around smaller, stretchier power forwards, which is not going to be good for a guy who's not the most physical guy at this point anyway. I think it's kind of not quite an albatross, I would say, but because I think he'll still probably be a useful player throughout the duration of the contract, but I think it will inhibit some of what they can do and some of their flexibility as far as team building goes, especially if they decide over the summer that it's better to kind of do like a semi-rebuild around the number one pick and try to shift their window of contention more toward like Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, and whoever the pick is. So that's just something to keep an eye on, I think.
Well, just wait until they put like cement blocks on their feet by maxing out Thomas and Bradley, and all of a sudden you have this team that's built around like those, like them two and Horford, and then we can talk about Danny Ainge is a genius and he understands things that only, you know, dolphins and ancient sea animals could understand, or like Brad Stevens is my president. Like just wait until they're garbage, like hopelessly mediocre, and then we can talk about like President Stevens and Danny Ainge's master plan. Like I hate Celtics Twitter so much.
No, I've had enough talking about the Celtics. Let's do predictions really quick. You think they can come back against the Bulls, or you think that the Bulls are gonna end up taking it?
I hope they pull out like one game where Isaiah Thomas puts up like 60 points, because poor Isaiah Thomas, man, it's tragic, the whole situation with his sister. But no, I don't think they're gonna actually win, unless the Bulls like have a meeting and they're like, listen, I don't want to be here, you don't want to be here, like let's just throw this thing. Although like given their luck, I think they would like throw it and again fall ass backwards into the championship. So no, my official prediction is that the Bulls will sweep the Celtics. That's my prediction. What about you?
I don't like this Bulls team. I think I've been on record saying I don't like this Bulls team, and I kind of would loathe to see them in the next round. But I think it'll be tough for the Celtics to come back and beat them. And I think they're definitely gonna need to take both games in Chicago if they're gonna want a chance. But I mean, there's always a chance that the Bulls team starts imploding, and you know, it takes like one screw up by Rondo or someone to get them bickering again. So we'll see. But I think right now I would say Bulls in six. I think the Celtics get two. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk about another series. Let's talk about Cavs and Pacers really quick. What do you think about the series so far?
The first game was a lot of fun. The second one was like a little bit less competitive. LeBron's been great. The Cavs defense has still been kind of awful. I think the best part's been all like little Lance antics. Like there was a 5-minute stretch in the second game where he just decided, like, all right, like, nobody else putting the ball in the basket. Lance Stevenson is going one-on-one for the next, you know, like, 12 possessions. And it was really funny to, like, just watch everybody else on the floor just stare at him with like, horror, but, like, not surprise, as he just kind of tried to, like, spin his way into the paint, unsuccessfully, like, six times. Yeah, I don't know. It's been good. I kind of expected it to not be a sweep, but, like, it might end up being a sweep. I don't know. I really hope that like it becomes competitive, because I think there's a team that could figure out how to push the Cavs, at least in his first round. It was going to be the Pacers. Just because, you know, Paul George started just, you know, like rediscovered that he was a superstar in the last couple weeks of the regular season. And he's been playing great. And like the entire narrative of like, you know, Lance and Paul reunited is cute and fun and good for the NBA.
Paul George is like 2 grand.
Right. Tanda, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that it's been a little bit more competitive than I think a lot of people expect it to be. Even though it, like at the same time it really hasn't. It's kind of lived up to the lack of expectations for it. Because like even though the score has been kind of close, like I feel like the Cavs had a pretty good handle on it for the most part. I don't know. I don't really see the Pacers team as being able to push the Cavs that much. I think that maybe they can steal one game, like if Paul George goes off or something, and they get like a big Miles Turner game. But I think they're gonna win one at most. What do you think the Cavs' defensive problems are gonna persist through these playoffs? Like how big a deal do you think that is?
It's so hard to tell because with this Cavs team, like there's always this feeling. With any LeBron team, really, there's like this feeling that they could just flip the switch whenever they want, everything will be fine. I don't believe that as much with this Cavs team on either end of the floor, but like we're talking about LeBron, like he can kind of will things into existence. So I don't know. I don't know how much I'd think about it for the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, here's the thing: is like I'm a little bit worried about the defense because it's so atrocious for like, you know, whatever, like a month and a half now, and it hasn't really shined. Like they haven't shown the ability to be able to flip a switch in the playoffs so far. But at the same time, like we'll see if any of these Eastern Conference opponents are going to be able to exploit that. We'll see. We'll see as the playoffs go on. But I mean, the East has been. I don't know if you feel the same way, but for me, like the top teams in the East have been super underwhelming so far, between the Raptors and the Celtics and the Wizards have been fine, but
yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's gonna be an issue for them until they get to at least like the conference finals.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
All right, well, why don't we move on from that series? Let's talk about the Raptors and the Bucks series, which. It's been, the first game was very Raptors-y. They lost it, obviously, because what else were they going to do? But then the second game, they went up big, and they kind of blew the lead. And they're kind of lucky to be getting out of that one with a win. I mean, you saw the end of the game where it was like Brogdon missed a wide-open three, and then Dellavedova missed another wide-open three that would have put them up. And they would have been in a pretty good position there. So, like, what do you think? Do you think that the Raptors are in trouble? Do you think that they're raptoring right now? Or do you think that it's kind of like more of a blip and they should be okay going forward?
I don't think there's a big difference between raptoring and being in trouble. Like, this team feel – okay, so, like, whereas the Celtics feel incredibly flimsy, like, this Raptors team feels probably the least flimsy of any Raptors team in the past, like, 3 years. But, like,
yeah.
I don't know, man. Like that first game was a bad loss. And, like you said, they were, like, two or three open, like, wide open three-pointers from losing the second one. Yeah, if I were a Raptors fan, I would be very concerned. I think they haven't really figured out, like, how they're guarding Giannis. I think they had DeMar Carroll on him for a bit, and Carroll kind of got eaten alive. And they put PJ Tucker on him, and PJ Tucker did a better job. Like the numbers look better. Giannis shot worse, but like Giannis is still kind of unstoppable. And I don't know. Like I don't know if they can. I don't know if they can get control of this series before like the very end. Like I could see this one going to a game seven potentially.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a good series, man. Like. Giannis is really, he's ridiculous. And they don't really have a good answer for him. And I mean, honestly, like, in the first two games, what's really struck me is, like, I think this is kind of, like, Giannis's coming out party. Where we're going to look back on this in, like, 5 years and be like, okay, this was where Giannis, like, ascended to being, like, you know, a top five player in the league. Because he's in... just awesome, and he's looked unstoppable a lot of the time. And he does things on the basketball court that, like, just should not even be physically possible. Did you see late in the fourth quarter yesterday when Giannis kind of, like, spun around Tucker and like, got an and-one and was, like, kind of getting pushed out of bounds and then just, like, reached his huge arm and just, like, finger-rolled it right in? And it was like the easiest thing in the world for him. And it was just like this ridiculous
thing. It looked like the early 2000s 2K games where like they had these bizarre glitches where people would like fly through each other or like through the backboard or like all types of bizarre stuff like that. It was like that, but in real life. And that's kind of what the experience of watching Giannis is. It's watching a video game glitch out over and over and over again. Oh my God. I kind of appreciate that, like, our last memory of playoff Giannis was just him, like, grabbing Mike Dunleavy Jr. by the throat and throwing him. And then he kind of, like, there's, like, a very pretty comic book narrative somewhere of, like, you know, him being, like, the Phoenix and like, you know, crumbling into ashes then and then kind of coming back out as this beautiful, majestic superstar Giannis in this series. That's what I think about when I'm trying to fall asleep at night.
Is that what you're doing, trying to fall asleep? Never mind. I definitely agree with you. Like, it's awesome. It's been awesome to just see his maturation as a player. And, you know, just coming over as this tiny little, this kid from Greece who was, like, homeless and had been hustling on the streets or whatever, and then turning into, you know, Giannis, which it's been awesome. He's such a tough matchup for anyone, but especially this Raptors team. And I kind of like Tucker guarding him just because he's so physical. And Giannis is still just, he's so skinny, that's it's tough. But, I mean, he's just so much longer and taller and just, like, Giannis than everyone else. There's just not really a whole lot that Tucker can do sometimes. It's going to be interesting to see if DeRozan and Lowry can finally get on track in the playoffs. So do you think that it's like their style of play is just not conducive to playoff basketball? Because like at this point we have a decent sample size of like playoffs and playoff series and games that they've played where they haven't been super effective in the playoffs. So what do you think about that?
Don't we have the same conversation like every year with this Raptors team?
Oh, yeah. Every year. But every year the sample size grows bigger and every year it gets harder and harder to call it.
At this point, I'm not entirely sure like what the problem is with them. Like, I don't know if you can isolate it onto like one person involved or like one thing. Like for a while people were saying like, oh, it's Dwayne Casey, and they were like, Kyle Lowry's not that good, and they're like, well, no, really, it's DeRozan. It's like the front court is bad, or like it's Valanciunas, and like I don't know, man. Like maybe it's just what happens when you put a basketball team in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what happened to the Grizzlies after they relocated to Vancouver. They had the most successful stretch of their basketball lives. So maybe the answer is just take that basketball out of Canada, or maybe honestly, this is my theory. My working theory is that the Raptors' continued playoff struggles, and specifically Lowry and DeRozan's, is a universe like karmically rewarding the city of Toronto for Drake and his front runner garbage. that's what I think this is, because Drake is just like out here rooting for Kentucky and like LeBron, the Warriors, and whoever. Like I think that the universe is just like giving Toronto the shaft, kind of, because that's what they deserve.
He always has, like, 2 weeks of Raptors fandom. And then, like, as soon as that's over, he's, like, back out there, like, hugging LeBron and taking champagne showers next to Steph. Like, more life.
More life, my man. All right, let's get your prediction for the Drakes and the Giannises.
Raptors in six. I don't like that. Like, that's upsetting to me, but, like, I don't know. Like, first-round Raptors always do this. That's my prediction. What about you?
Yeah. I think I'm gonna go with the Raptors team. Because, actually, I really like this Raptors team. I think that they'll probably make an adjustment at some point and figure out the best way to guard the Milwaukee. Because, like, I like a lot of the guys Milwaukee has, but and Dellavedova and Brogdon are both pretty good individual defenders, but like they're a little bit undersized, and you would think that Lowry and DeRozan would be able to wear them down as the series goes on. But I mean, again, they have a lot of guys they can throw at him, so we'll see. But I kind of think Raptors at 7. Also, really quick, just man, this Bucks team is they're going to be really, really, really interesting over the next few years. Because when you think about it, they got their starting lineup already kind of set for the next few years, like Thon Maker, Jabari, assuming he comes back healthy, Giannis, Chris Middleton is awesome, and Brogdon is kind of like a perfect fit there. So they're going to be really, really scary if they can stay healthy and then, you know, add a couple, like, other complimentary pieces. Because even Thon is, like, this super long guy you can, like, kind of shoot and see, like, the pass he made to, I feel like it was Delvin Dover Brogdon last night where he took a drive and he kind of caught in the air and he ended up turning around and finding whoever was the open three. It was impressive for a guy who is, you know, 23, I guess. so they're gonna be a handful down the road. All right, let's talk about the last Eastern Conference series though. The NBA TV series, the Wizards and the Hawks, because the Hawks are always on NBA TV and will be on NBA TV for all time in perpetuity.
I love that because Atlanta's like in every other respect like this kind of cool, like trendy city, you know, like and just for some reason their basketball team is like nobody likes them. I don't even think the people in Atlanta like them. I've never in my life met a Hawks fan. I've met like people from Atlanta. I've just never met somebody who likes the Hawks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's just a weird thing. It's like you especially think like just the culture in Atlanta would really support the Hawks a little bit more, but for whatever reason they just have never been able to catch on and just are kind of always gonna have the destiny to be the all NBA or NBA TV team. So I know you wrote up the series for Hoops Inquirer, right?
Oh yeah. I did. I put it off for as long as possible because the idea of writing about the Hawks just made me sick. Like it just like, but yeah, I did. I predicted a sweep by the Wizards, and I still maintain that. The Hawks are not good. They're just not good.
No.
Like, Dwight's fine. Dwight is fine. Tim Hardaway Jr.
Yeah, no,
Dwight
is actually
here. Fine. He's fine.
Dwight
yeah, he's fine.
Here.
Like Dennis Schroeder. Is
kind of trash.
He's okay.
Kind of trash.
Paul Millsap is great. He's awesome. And you know what? I think this will be his last year in Atlanta.
Yeah? You think he's gone this year?
No, I think he's gone.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with that. I think he's going to take a look at the roster and he's going to get a max off from someone and be out of there. Which, I mean, they're going to be – it's probably maybe I have to be pathetic for them. They need to kind of take a direction because they're a mediocre team at this point, and they don't have any upside to be a better one, and they're only going to get worse, I think, just based on the players they have in their system. So maybe it'll be better for the Hawks to, like, kind of start rebuilding sooner rather than later because, yeah, they were a bad team. Like, Tim Hardaway is, like, their number two scoring option on the team. You know, so I don't know. Well, Hawks are. Sorry, go on.
The last thing that I want to say about the Hawks, where we talk about the Wizards, which is like all you should talk about with this series because they will win it, is just a question for you. Do you think that Budenholzer bears any resemblance to White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer?
I can see. I see it. I can see like. Maybe not, like, brothers, but definitely, like, cousins or something, you know. Or, like, maybe, like, brothers separated by some time. I can see it. I can see some family history in there.
Yeah, I think they're two, like, kind of, like, pasty, chubby guys with, like, similar haircuts. Who have a tendency to turn red very quickly.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. Do you think that Budenholzer would be doing a better job as White House Press Secretary than Mr. Spicer?
No, only because I think that the Trump White House Press Secretary needs to be in the full spirit of that administration, and Budenholzer would probably be too much of like a person with his head screwed on properly to be just like the right amount of like aggro and like hurt and confused and wounded animal type, you know, deal that you need in that role for that White House.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, so let's talk about the Wizards a little bit. I'm done with the Hawks. Hawks are kind of depressing, honestly. Like, I guess this is our reason that when Atlanta likes Hawks, because you talk about them for like 5 minutes, and you're like, wow, I'm kind of sad now. And that's kind of been like the last like 10 years of their existence, if not longer. So, I guess that's why people don't really like Hawks. But the Wizards, though, the Wizards have been like the one playoff team the one top team from the East that's been, I guess, kind of meeting our expectations. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say so. I felt about the Wizards ever since they kind of turned their season around early on. Like, they're the one team in the East who, like, really makes sense to challenge the Cavs in the conference finals. And I still feel that way. I mean, John Wall, like, controlled the game so brilliantly in the first game of the series. He had a great season. Bradley Beal has been, like, a full-functioning person, and he's been very good at basketball. Like, Markieff Morris has been noticeably not nuts. Like, Scott Brooks is an actual NBA coach who is good at doing NBA coach things, shockingly
yeah.
enough. Like they're just a good team. Like, I think they – and, like, I like them more than the Cavs. I just like them. Like, they're fun to watch.
Yeah, I think they definitely – they present a lot of matchup problems just with their backcourt / wing rotation, where they can throw, obviously, Beal and Wall out there, but then, like, you know, Kelly Oubre had a nice season, and Otto Porter turned into like, the J.J. Redick or someone. So I think, yeah, they definitely pose a lot of issues. You know, their defense completely fell off over the last month or so, month and a half. So, like, again, we'll see if they can kind of right that ship. Especially, like, Wall's kind of been a little bit lax of late. But when he's locked in, he's an all-world defender, you know. So I'm not concerned, I guess, with them, especially just because of their first-round opponent, which, you know, it's so funny where like, I guess it kind of just speaks to how close the seeding was in the East, where it was like, the Wizards drew the Hawks in the 4-5 matchup, and they lucked out, and the Celtics got the Bulls in the 1-8 seed, and they're like, they're screwed now. But yeah, I kind of think that there's not a whole lot to worry about over in Washington, just because the Hawks aren't very good, and then with any luck, they'll get the Bulls next round, who, you know, for 82 games of the year, we're not that good. And then who knows what's going to happen when they get if/when they get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But it's looking pretty good for the Wizards right now. It looks good for them.
Yeah, no. They didn't get themselves, like, a cool, you know, new nickname. They called themselves, like, Death Row or something after the West Coast rap label that had, like, Pac and Snoop and Suge Knight and
Who's on the Wizards today? So, like, John Wall guy has to be Tupac, right? John Wall is Dr. Dre, I think, because he's producing everything. I guess Bradley Beal is kind of Tupac, because, you know, you put John Wall's production behind him, and you get All Eyes on Me. Which is this season for Bradley Beal. I guess Martine probably has to be Suge Knight, right?
Well, like, Markieff Morris actually, like, assigned alter egos to a bunch of people on the team, and I'm forgetting what they were for the majority of them, but I know that he gave Suge Knight to, like, somebody's bodyguard or something, or, like, some staff person on, like, the team, or I forget, but it's not somebody on the roster. So he gave Suge Knight to just some random dude that nobody had ever heard of. But I like that. I like NBA teams having fun, giving themselves ridiculous like alter egos. That's a good time.
Yeah, no, and that's why the NBA just, like, stays the best league, because they do fun stuff like that. All right, let's move out west now. Give me a prediction quick.
Wizards
I guess you stand with Wizards in four. right. I guess, man, I kind of think Wizards in five because they're the Wizards. I don't say Wizards in five, but, yeah, could be a sweep. I don't know. The Wizards are going to win. That's all that really matters in the series.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go out west. Let's talk about my favorite series in the first round, the Jazz and Clippers, which I wrote up a little bit for Hoops Inquirer, and it has a lot of long-term ramifications for both teams, I think.
Break it down.
And you know, obviously it started off that as poorly as it could start off for the Jazz with Gobert, who's been arguably their best player this year, going down like immediately. But yeah, I mean, both these teams are kind of like I was saying before, a lot of these teams are kind of at crossroads come this offseason, including the Hawks and possibly the Raptors and, you know, the Pacers. And I guess that's kind of the nature of these things. But, you know, these two teams both have some personnel decisions to make in the offseason, the Clippers especially, who've had the same team basically for like, you know, 4 or 5 years now. And if either one of these teams kind of loses quickly or loses in an uninspiring fashion, I think that they're going to have to do some serious reevaluation and decide whether, like, these are the cores of teams they want to be locked into. The Jazz especially be interesting because, you know, when this team isn't healthy, which hasn't been very often this year, they have been, like, a juggernaut. I mean, I think that when they're starting five plays together, they were at like a 57 or 58 win pace. So I mean, they've been really, really good when they've been healthy. But like, you know, it depends how good exactly. Like, how good do you think this Jazz team can?
Yeah. So like, the lucky thing for them is that even though they've never been healthy, they're very deep. They did like a good job in this offseason to kind of like stock up with a bunch of veteran guys who can fill like a lot of different roles, like, you know, like Boris Diaw and Joe Johnson, just guys like they can kind of do like kind of, you can put them in anywhere and they can make something happen. So you know, the Gobert injury is big. The Gobert injury is, I think, the one besides the Hayward injury that I think could be really devastating for them. I think like that limits their ceiling more than anything else, and I think the injury was like an overextension of the knee or something like that. So it wasn't that serious, but when you're that huge of a person, like even small, unserious sounding things can have these crazy ramifications and consequences that linger. So it's bad. The best thing for the Jazz, like the most important thing, is that they get out of the playoffs this year with Gobert healthy. I think more so than winning the first round, because I think even if you lose in the first round, I still would assume that Hayward stays in this offseason.
Yeah, and
so,
you know,
I think
to speak to that really quick, I think they're kind of like watching the Celtics series, you know, with like just like keep an eye on it a little bit, because I'm sure they're seeing that the Celtics are looking terrible right now, and they're cheering because I think the Celtics are really like main / only competition for Gordon Hayward's services in the offseason. And I think it's a lot harder to justify for him making a move to Boston if they lose in the first round, just like the Jazz. Just a quick little tangent there.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the Clipper situation is actually more interesting than the one with the Jazz, primarily because every year there's kind of a discussion, like sort of like with the Raptors, what we were talking about earlier, like every year with the Clippers there's that discussion of, all right, like this is the year that things don't work out. They need to change something dramatic, right? But every year, like around this time, like Doc Rivers comes out, he did it earlier this week, or I guess this point last week, but he'll come out and he'll be like, listen, even if things don't work out this year, I'm not ready to break this core up. I still believe in this core. Like, meanwhile, like, every really good thing that happens on the floor with them, like, it's Chris Paul and DeAndre. Like, that's the good things that happen. Like, Blake is just, he's still, this many years into it, like, Blake does not look, like, totally natural out there with them. And Doc is done. You're like, no, like, believe me, if we keep on banging our heads against the wall, this will work. I don't know, man.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Doc is, he's never really shown a particular aptitude to being able to work both GM and coach roles at the same time. And that's why I think it'll be kind of interesting this offseason, where, like, if and when they lose in the first round or two in the playoffs, because if they get past the Jazz, which is not a guarantee, they're going to just run smack into the Warriors, and they're, like, in all likelihood going to get swept, because that's just what happens when they play the Warriors. And you know, even though Chris Paul looked awesome last night, like, you know, people always kind of are like, well, I wish Chris Paul would be more aggressive, and I wish he'd take more of a scoring role. He did that last night. Like, there was a point in like, the late in game where he took over the game, and he was scoring wherever he wanted to, and he was getting to whatever spots he wanted to. He was like, we're going to win this game. So, like, that's kind of an interesting thing to watch, because Chris Paul is such a good player still, but, like, they can't do anything against the Warriors. It's not going to happen. They don't have the wing defenders. They don't have the defense key. Like, they don't match up well with them. So, like, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, not at all.
If the only thing that, like, predicates that a change to them is changing Doc's role as team, whether it's, like, firing outright or just relegating to coach's role or what. But because they I think they pretty clearly need a shakeup of some sort come the offseason. Because they've been really good in the regular season, and they've consistently put out, like, top five offense, whatever. And there's something to be said for being as good as they have been. But also, it's like, you know, how many years can you sit around waiting to see if the Warriors, the Spurs, whoever, like, suffer a major injury? Like, I mean, the Warriors had a Kevin Durant injury this year, and it just doesn't matter. So, I think they definitely should probably trade Blake and try to rejigger with some role players or something around the DeAndre and Chris Paul pick and roll.
Yeah, they're one team. They're another one, like, besides the Celtics, where I think that replacing Blake with Melo might actually be very good for them.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it will happen because I think at this point, Melo's probably thinking of just, like, doing the classic petty Melo thing and digging his heels in as hard as possible to you know, wait out Phil. But yeah, something has to change. If not Blake, then I think for sure Doc needs to be relegated to just coaching because Doc the GM is not looking so hot these days.
Yeah, I think that's being kind, I think. But yeah, we'll see. It's an interesting series to watch, and it's a really competitive series. I mean, it's really two really good teams going at it. So what do you think? What do you think is going to happen in that series?
It's so hard to tell. I think that if Gobert doesn't come back, I think it's going to be like Clippers in. I'll give them six. Clippers in six. If Gobert comes back, I think that it could be Jazz in the same in six or seven.
Yeah, I think it obviously is very dependent on whether Gobert comes back healthy or not. I mean, they seem to be like cautiously optimistic about it, but I kind of think that it's either Clippers in six or Clippers in seven. The Gobert injury obviously changed a lot, so we'll see what happens. I think the Clippers are going to prevail in this series. All right, let's move on to Spurs and OKC.
So the OKC series is obviously an infinitely better series than the Spurs Grizzly series. The OKC Rockets series kind of, you know, picks up the two potentially leading MVP candidates, although we won't find out until after the finals, which is really dumb. But that's definitely like the more fun series to talk about of the two for sure.
Yeah, no, it's kind of funny to just, like, see that it happened this way, you know, where you have Russ versus Harden in the first round, and you kind of get to see, like, the juxtaposition of their two styles and how they play against each other. You know, and for some sort of the MVP debate is, like, oh, is it more impressive for Russ dragging this Thunder team to 47 wins or whatever they had, or Harden taking this Rockets team to 55 wins? And I don't know. What's your take on that?
With all due respect to Hoops Inquirer's Trey Rodriguez, I'm going to have to go with Wes's accomplishment is more impressive, only because, listen, like when you go real deep into the numbers, like the production is not actually all that different. And I think what changes is like the guys that are around Harden are better. Like period, they're better than the guys that are around Russ. Like the team as it is constructed around Harden makes sense for a team constructed around Harden. Like it makes sense and it works. Like it's cohesive, it's coherent. The team around Russ is a team that was designed to have Kevin Durant on it as well. And like it shouldn't work, and it really doesn't work as a team. But like they like Russ is the reason why they pull wins out. That's it. You know, to me, they're both incredibly impressive. And I think if there was ever a time to have co-MVPs, this would be it. But no, I really am of the opinion that the Russ's accomplishment is far more impressive, or at least moderately more impressive than Harden's.
So I'm sure we'll do a podcast at some point, just on do awards and stuff, because that's what, you know, basketball writers do. can I take that to mean that you would take Russ over Harden as your MVP? Was that an admission of Russ?
Yeah, and like I feel bad because like they both deserve it, but if only one can win, I gotta give it to Russ.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm probably gonna vote as Isaiah Thomas. no, but yeah, I tend to. I'm a huge Celtics over. I'm sorry. I kind of tend to agree with you. I think that like people are very quick to be like, well, Russ doesn't play with like this supporting cast is very, it's okay, it's pretty good. Like, and I don't know why they're saying that, because like it's not a good cast of players. It's not that they're bad players, but they're really limited, and especially just like people are like, well, they knock Russ for having such a high usage rate and whatnot, and like I get that it's super historically high, but like at the same time, it's like who is he gonna pass to? You know, he's like, hey, Roberson, take this, or like, Kristaps, go take this, and it's like. These dudes are not good offensive players. You know, like, Oladipo's okay. Like, Adams can do some stuff out of pick and roll. Cantor's a good post-up guy. McDermott can shoot, but he didn't. But, like, yeah, other than that, you know, it's like they don't have a whole lot there. But exactly what you're saying, where, like, the Rockets clearly, like, made a conscious decision. They're like, we're going to build around Harden. We're going to build a system that completely is tailored to his game. We're going to accentuate his strengths and spread the floor and put him in pick and rolls and get D'Antoni on board, and we're going to be like the new age Suns. Like, that makes just so much sense, as opposed to we're going to get a bunch of battergrams who can't shoot, and we're going to have like four guys in the paint every time that Russell Westbrook drives in, and we're going to get upset when he passes out to Andre Roberson and he like shoots a three off the shot clock.
You want a fun little game to play? All right,
yeah.
Right now, imagine same rosters, you switch Russ and Harden, who has more wins?
I think Russ has more wins, definitely. I don't think it's that close, actually.
There you go. Nope, I don't think so either.
Yeah, you know Harden's, like, a more creative passer, I would say. I think... saying that Harden is straight up a better passer than Westbrook sells Westbrook short his pass. He's a really, really good creator, but it's tough when you're working in these tight little spaces and you have no one that can shoot around you. Whereas, you know, Harden, you have five guys or four guys around him that can shoot, and one guy or three guys that can shoot, and one guy runs the rim. So that's obviously a little bit easier. He's a better shooter than Russ, obviously, too. Russ is just so dynamic, and I think that, like, okay, so take Russ off this team, like, and put, I don't know, like, put Kemba Walker on this team. How many games do they win? 30 games?
If that. Like, if that.
25 games? I mean, that's not a good team. They
like,
wouldn't be able to
score. They'd be really bad.
Yeah, so I think just maybe even necessarily if the rosters aren't, like, even if the overall talent on the Houston roster isn't necessarily better than the talent on the OKC roster, which I think you can make a pretty strong case that it is anyway, like, definitely the roster construction and the fit are a lot better on the Houston team.
Right, like, which is not to say that James Harden isn't incredible. Like, James Harden is incredible, period.
Yeah, that's the thing. Nothing
like, most
James
years
Harden.
He would be the runaway MVP, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I mean, this team would not be a good team without him. It just so happens that it is uniquely tailored exactly to fit his skill set and to make him play as he does, whereas Russ is kind of doing it with a little bit more resistance, I think. So, yeah, I guess I'm admitting my Russ for MVP candidacy, too. So we can debate that more on the different podcast. But okay, so give me a prediction for this series.
Rockets in five.
Rockets in five?
Yeah.
Oh man, this is tough. I mean, look, the Thunder looks bad, and I think it's really a bad matchup for them just because I don't think they'll be able to generate enough offense to really stay with the Rockets. I'm gonna say Rockets in six now. Rockets in six. I think the Thunder will push them a little bit. I think they'll
I hope so.
Kill them on the boards a couple games.
I hope so.
But yeah. All right, let's go through these last two really quickly because we don't have that much to talk about with them, and then we can talk about the good stuff. Talk about the Knicks. Spurs Grizzlies. Thoughts on that?
It's going to be a sweep. I wrote about that one on the Inquirer as well. You know, like, there's just not enough of a team of NBA players around Conley and Gasol to really give the Spurs a run for their money. Like, it's unfortunate. I really enjoyed Fizdale's, like, freak out the other day. You know, like, that was a lot of fun and, like, good for him, man. Like, that's great. Like, there's a lot of talk about, like, when they hired him about, he never played, but, like, he knows how to connect with players and da-da-da-da. And, like, things like that, you can kind of see why he connects with them so well. You know, he puts himself out there for his team, and that's really cool to see. But, nah, man, like, it's going to be a sweep. Like, the games aren't very good, and I don't think the officiating was actually bad. Like, maybe it was a little bit lopsided, but like nowhere near what Fizdale was freaking out about. So, yeah, it's too bad, but you know I'm going Spurs and four.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is not really soon. I feel like this is what happens with the Grizzlies every year. It's like they come up to the playoffs and they have a bunch of like these fringe guys. And Tony Allen's loss really hurt them. Like I think if Tony Allen was still healthy and playing well, they could probably make it a more competitive series just because they have someone to throw at Kawhi. But I mean, as it is, like, James Ennis is their best defender on Kawhi, and that's just, like, it's not really going to cut it. There's not a lot to say here. The Spurs are going to win four. But, you know, at least it's better this year. Maybe not. Wayne Felton coming off the bench. But, like, do you remember like, the Xavier Munford game last year where, like, ooh, Xavier Munford, he looks like a player. Like, who's this guy? Are they just signing guys off the street now?
That's what it felt like for a while. Like their best player last year for like a couple minutes was Lance Stevenson. Like, oh god, poor guys.
Yeah, they have some fun times over there, Memphis. So that'll be an interesting thing, especially they're another team kind of at a crossroads in the offseason, even though they don't really have a lot of place to go. But like, yeah, it was bad. Like the end of the game yesterday, it was like Vince Carter was 40-year-old Vince Carter was checking Kawhi. Really, this is your best guy? This is like the only guy you have left to throw at Kawhi Leonard, like one of the four top MVP candidates this year, who averaged 25 points a game. That's not gonna work. Let's move on from that one though. The Grizzlies are they're kind of in rough shapes. And then we'll talk about Warriors and Trailblazers real quick. I mean, can the Trailblazers steal a game? Does it matter?
Like, yeah, maybe if Durant misses this Wednesday night game, they could steal it, but like, does it matter? Like, no, of course not. Like, the Warriors were actually almost better at times during the regular season without Durant, because like, they knew how to play together better because they didn't have to, you know, work around Durant's considerable talents. But no, it doesn't matter. Like, this will be – like, the first game was a great example of why one win won't matter. Because you had, like, your two best players for the Blazers, like, just going off. And you go into the fourth quarter and they're down, like, 12, 15, whatever. Like, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And so do you think if Nurkic makes it back, he makes any difference for Portland? Because I mean, he definitely makes them a better team. Like, you think it matters? Still now.
He makes them a better team in a way that is actually really helpful against the Warriors, who like don't have a great front court. But even then, like, nah, I don't think it's enough to steal a game.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, that's the way for me. Like, the Warriors have kind of just like opened up, and then I guess it's kind of what everyone said at the beginning of the year, and it took a little while for them to coalesce, I guess, and find that level of play. But like, I mean, do you feel any kind of confidence that there's any team in the playoffs that can really realistically challenge the Warriors?
Like, by challenge, do you mean like potentially beat them in a series, or do you mean like
steal
more than one game?
Yeah, like really actually challenge the Warriors and make them sweat in a series.
The Rockets, if there's one, and like the Rockets, even I don't know if they could, but like if there's one, I think that it might be the Rockets, just because like the degree of variance is so high. So like if they just, you know, shoot the absolute lights out for like four games, like you can't do anything about that, and like they can do that, like that can happen with them. So yeah, that's an option, but apart from that, like not really.
Yeah,
like, there's definitely nothing in the East that'll bother them.
I keep hearing, you know, a lot of people saying that as far as like the Rockets, and I totally get how the variance might be appealing, but like I don't know, man. I just don't see it. Even if they go, like, whatever, they're going to go from three and they go, like, you're on fire. You know, if you're, like, they're trying to get into a shootout with the Warriors, who employ three of the best, like, five shooters of all time. Or, you know, not maybe they're, like, three of the top 10 shooters of all time, which is maybe not the best thing that you want. And they've been so locked in on defense. And the Rockets kind of, after Harden, are a little bit weak as far as, like, secondary creators go. I don't even think the Rockets really pose that much of a threat. I think that it would take a lot for them to beat the Warriors. Just last question on this one before we move on. What do you think the Warriors' chances are of, like, how many losses, I guess, do you think that the Warriors are going to have during these playoffs?
Including the finals?
Yeah.
Let's go with 3.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of was thinking like maybe 3 or 4, because they're not going to lose in the first two rounds. They might, yeah, depending who they play in the Western Conference Finals. Like, I could definitely see if they play the Spurs, like a 4-1 series, something like that, I think it's going to be hard. It's going to be tough to take more than a game or two from them.
Yeah, I think 3 or 4 makes sense, and I think that 2 of them will be back to back, and people will like there will be like, you know, approximately like 500,000 words written on the internet minimum about, oh, are they falling apart, or oh, we, you know, this team wasn't really that good, were they? And then like they'll go and win the whole thing, and everybody will shut up for a while, and then we can start
gotta
it all again
next
year, because that's how sports works.
Gotta love it. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the thing that we've all been waiting to talk about, the New York Knicks, who inexplicably, like, untenably just have managed to become a headline even in the midst of a terrible year and in the middle of pretty exciting first round of playoffs. So, like, where do you want to start with this? Because there's a whole lot of stuff going on.
You got to start with the Phil Jackson presser, which is the first time he talked to the media. I think it was like the very beginning of the season. He talked for like 50 minutes and was like really candid is the word that people were using. I think he was, but oh my God. I mean, he just got up there and he was like, so we can't really win with Carmelo. And we look at him as the kind of player who'd be better off playing somewhere else. Like, what?
Yeah. And like I think it was Ramona Shelburne who came out and said this. She was like, you know, like Phil could kind of like barb at guys in the media when he was coaching because he was a lot more connected to the team. But it's like, dude, you haven't been in the public's eye. You haven't talked to anyone in months, and you're gonna come out and say that? Like come on, what are you doing? Like, do you realize how insane you sound right now? And then that obviously led to our large adult son, Kristaps, being upset with the organization and skipping his exit interview because, you know, so as not to incur the wrath of Mr. Jackson. And that's the whole mantra of Knicks fans during this time is, like, it doesn't matter as long as we have Kristaps. It doesn't matter, Kristaps. But, like, Jesus, man, if Phil is going to alienate Kristaps, like, I told my friend the other day, I was like, we were talking, I was like, look, man, if Phil ends up trading Kristaps or does something, like, I'll be a Nets fan. I'll come be a Nets fan with you. I'm cool with it. Like, I like what Sean Marks and Kenny Axton.
Yeah, I started, like, trying to develop, like, an emotional attachment to the Heat in the last couple of weeks of the season because I was starting to get super jaded about the Knicks. The most nuts thing, like, what makes the Phil Jackson presser, like, most insane is, like, if he had gotten up there and he had said a bunch of stuff that was, like, just, like, the substance of which was notably crazy, like, it almost wouldn't have been a big deal. The problem was that he got up there and he said a bunch of stuff that's, like, kind of true. Like, yes, like, Carmelo is older. Like, yes, Carmelo would probably be better off putting somewhere else. Like, yes, Carmelo holds the ball. Like, all of the above are likely true. Like, yes, I'm sure that some number of the players, like, were resistant to wanting to play the offense that you are forcing Jeff Hornacek, like, to run. But, like, you don't get up there and say that. You know, like, those things are true. The fact that, like, everybody knows them, the fact that you get up and say them does not help your situation at all. Like, it doesn't help you with negotiating for a Melo trade because now, like, he has no value because, like, you want him out. He has no trade clause. So, like, good luck getting anything of remote value in return. Like, the Kurt Rambis stuff is also just mind-boggling, where it's like, you have these reports coming out of that Kurt was, like, yelling at players, like, all the time, just, like berating them, and
you think Rambis has, like, something on Phil? Like, yeah, you know, like, the Trump dossier, you think he has, like, the Jackson dossier? Like, because, I mean, he has to have something on Phil at this point. Like, it can't just be, like, their mutual love for the triangle and all triangular-shaped objects. I mean, like, Rambis is just, like, pretty, like, clearly, statistically, like, one of the worst head coaches of all time, and he just keeps coming back to the Phil just keeps coming back to the Rambis well and drawing from its poisoned waters.
I don't know, man, because, like, I think it's deeper than that. I think it's more than, like, Kurt knows something about Phil. Like, listen to what Phil said about Kurt in that press conference. He said, Kurt has all the knowledge that I have. Like, people were like, that's kind of strange. But, like, think about it. Like, that sounds like some, like, you know, like sci-fi stuff, right? Like, if I had to guess, Phil has been dead for, like, 10 years now, and him and Kurt have just been, like just sharing a brain or, like, important organs, like, for mostly major functions. I think there's, like, kind of, like, bizarre, like, symbiotic alien type relationship between them. Maybe it's like kind of like they do like some type of weird triangle voodoo and they merge their souls or something. Like I think it's much deeper and more horrifying than just like, you know, like Phil has like that like Kurt has naked pictures of Phil or something. I think it goes much deeper.
So you're saying that you kind of think that Kurt and Phil were like conjoined twins and Kurt was the one they decided to keep.
Yeah, basically, that's how I would put it. Like, it wouldn't totally surprise me if, like, sometimes, like, Kurt goes home and just tears his face off and he's Phil Jackson or vice versa.
I mean, when was the last time you saw them in the same place at the same time?
That happens frequently on Knicks PR pictures, like, of, like, them together. But, like, come on, like, you're telling me there's no other, like weird dad looking type guy like Kurt Rambis out there you can hire to go out there and act like Kurt Rambis.
Yeah, I'm sure they could find some dude just like walking down 34th Street who looks generally like Kurt Rambis and go, hey, you want to be in the team picture? Well, he's not gonna say no.
Yeah, and like teaching a random guy at the street like somebody's older like late middle aged dad how to say like triangle things wouldn't even be that hard because they're all basically like. You know, late middle-aged, crotchety, old person things anyway. It's like, it's like, you know, back in my day, we threw the ball into the post. Or like, you know, footwork. It's all about footwork. Or like, hold your pivot. Like, It's like, yeah. It's not even like a script you have to learn. Like, it's not technical, you know?
Yeah, I feel like Phil at this point is kind of like the guy who's coaching like a high school team, and like there's one guy who's like clearly better than other guys, and he just like benched him, and he's like, "Coach, why did I get benched?" He's like, "Oh, you didn't follow your shot." Like, "You didn't follow my shot? Are you kidding? What are we, like 7 years old playing in rec league? Like, come on."
They're such a disaster. What do you think is gonna happen? Do you think that Carmelo will get traded?
I think I think he's played his last game with the Knicks. Unless like Carmelo really resolves to be like, F you guys, F his organization, like F Phil, like I'm the man here, and just has like a whole machismo like kind of like wave or whatever. I think he's gone, and I think there's not really another course of action for the team. But like, I don't know, man. I have no idea what to expect out of Phil at this point, honestly. Gotta love him. All right, well, I think that's all we had time for today. Thank you guys for tuning in. Shout out to Clint. Maybe hopefully we'll get him on the
Clint.
Pod soon. I know we're supposed to maybe like last week, but hopefully we'll get Clint on soon. Shout out to my guy Ethan, who has been a steady listener to the podcast, and I told him I'd give him a shout out this week. So shout out to you, Ethan.
Shout
keep
out
on
Ethan.
Listening. You got anything coming up for Hoops and Choir?
I think I might crank out something on all this Knicks drama we've been talking about, and then soon we'll probably get into international draft prospects. So that's on the horizon. What about you? Anything?
We'll see what's coming up. Obviously, we have a bunch of playoff preview stuff that just came out. And we'll have content coming out throughout the playoffs. Check it out. Check it out on Hoops and Choir. Where can we find you on Twitter, Nick?
N_A_MBA. Yeah, that's what I'm tweeting at these days. What about you? What's your Twitter address?
You can find me at Will, spelled like Will, Will 11 underscore Smith. I don't even know my own Twitter handle. If you're looking to follow some great quality content and a lot of retweets from Hoops & Choir, you can find that there. Also, maybe it'll give you some hot takes on Kendra. It really depends on the man. It depends on the people, you know. So if we can get my Twitter following up, I'll give you guys some more hot takes, if that's something you want.
Very late. Very late.
All right. Thank you guys all for listening. Again, shouts to Clint. Shouts to Ethan. Hopefully you guys will tune in next week. Got a lot more playoff stuff coming up. Talk awards, talk draft soon. It's an exciting time in the NBA.
Yes, it is.
All right, man. See you guys later.
All right.